Welcome in, everybody. Hour number four of the JR Sport Brief. The Good Shepherd in for the great JR Sport Brief. Number to get aboard, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. It is great to be with you, however and wherever you may be listening from. We've certainly spent a good amount of time talking about some very impressive rookie performances in week one of the preseason at the quarterback position, whether it be the much and often too maligned Shedeur Sanders, whether it be the exciting All-SEC first-team quarterback in 2024, Jackson Dart, whether it be the underrated, understated number one overall pick, Cam Ward. Number to get aboard, per usual, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. I want to talk about something that took place in baseball before we get to your calls on Saturday that made this a landmark weekend in the sport. Now, you've heard of the name Jen Powell, I would hope, at this point. She becomes the first female umpire ever in a regular season game in Major League Baseball. It was Saturday's first game between the Atlanta Braves and the Miami Marlins, and it went swimmingly. And Brian Snitker, I know he's a longtime manager of the ATL. You talk about this old school Bobby Cox school of managing. He certainly falls into that creed, that group. He was very quick to praise Jen Powell and say she clearly knows what she's doing out there. And anytime you get praise from someone of the Bobby school, you know, Cox school of managing, you know you did something right. Good for Jen Powell for sticking with this, for someone that has really paid her dues. I like the fact that she got everything right. There was that close call on Sean Murphy. She ended up being right with that, as replays showed. And it was just very cool to see the crowd kind of take it in. You know, obviously, you know, at Truist Park, when you're in between innings, it's about festivities. It's about, you know, highlighting families. It's about highlighting fun. But they show Jen Powell on one of the video, you know, scoreboards during in between innings. And to see the standing ovation that she was able to receive, this was something that meant a lot to not just the sport of baseball, but the fans as well. And it's something that is long overdue in terms of having a female umpire. You know, she got the news this last Thursday that she would be making MLB history. She was solid. She was professional. She didn't let the moment overwhelm her. And she was very much up for the task at hand. And the reality is, for Jen Powell, as one would understandably be able to articulate, this was a dream come true.
Wow, just incredible. Like, dream came true. Like, the dream actually came true today, and I'm still living in it, and I'm just so grateful to my family, to Major League Baseball, for just creating such an amazing work environment.
You know, it says a lot about Jen Powell that she made this about what baseball did right, and it takes a lot for you to kind of go away from your moment and give praise to others. But this move, while groundbreaking, is so overdue. It's about damn time. 28 years ago, we saw an NBA female referee in Violet Palmer. That was back in 1997. More than a decade ago, we saw Sarah Thomas, the NFL's first woman on-field official. So the fact that it took baseball 10 years after the NFL broke ground, 28 years after the NBA broke ground, it's about damn time. But I just wanted to make sure that we highlighted this historic occasion in Major League Baseball. Also, in terms of what took place on the field over the weekend, how about that Dodgers-Blue Jays series? The Dodgers completely shellacked the Blue Jays the first two games, outscoring them 14-2. And you figure, after another leadoff home run by Shohei Ohtani, his 41st, by the way, you figure the Dodgers were going to have anything they wanted on Sunday, and they would have their fingerprints all over another victory. First, we got to play you Shohei going long, because it's just a sweet sound on Dodgers Radio Network.
On a 1-2 pitch, Ohtani pulls a fly ball, right field in deep. This ball is headed back, and we are tied. Shohei Ohtani with number 41, and the scoreboard now tied at 1. A leadoff blast for Shohei Ohtani. His ninth leadoff home run of the season, and it went 400 feet.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani's pretty damn good. It would have been nice if he did that when the bases were loaded in the bottom of the ninth inning with one out, down one run. It would have been nice if Mookie Betts got the memo too. But you credit the Toronto Blue Jays for their moxie, for staying strong, and for getting out alive in game number three. Again, you got back-to-back MVPs at the plate, down one run, bases loaded. You're able to get Shohei Ohtani looking. You're able to get Mookie Betts, you know, grounding out. So credit Toronto for getting shellacked the first two games of this series. There is a reason why the Blue Jays, not the Yankees, not the Red Sox, not the Tigers, not the Astros. It's the Blue Jays that currently have the best record in the American League. And if we're going to talk best records, we got to give some love to the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, I want to give everyone a current update right now. They have a 9-game winning streak, but Botcher, in about an hour and a half from now, do you know what they will have?
An off day?
A 10-game win streak.
No.
A 10-game win streak. Because they are clobbering the Pirates. They are up 6-1. To no one's surprise, they are up 6-1 because they have an individual in Jose Quintana on the mound and someone who you love what he has been able to do this year. He's about to pull off double-digit victories. Man, this is such a special time for Milwaukee. Now, look at what they have accomplished. 35-9 in their last 44 games. And we saw this earlier in the month. We saw what happened when they went on the road. They are the first team to ever go on the road, score 50-plus runs, not lose a game, and not commit a single error. What the Brewers do better than anyone in Major League Baseball is they don't beat themselves. And it's why they're about to be 30 games above 500, which is obviously a season best, and 5.5 games better than every team in Major League Baseball. And I'm sorry to bring this up, Ryan Botcher, because I know you're a big-time Mets fan, so feel free to close your ears when I say this. But the Mets were up 5-0 on Sunday. Like, you're not supposed to lose that game. And yet, they did so in walk-off fashion. Shout out to Isaac Collins, solo home run off of Edwin Diaz in the ninth inning. And ultimately, it continues to show you why the Brewers do not lose. It's unbelievable what they have been able to pull off. Now on pace for 102 wins, considering they have one-third the payroll of four Major League Baseball teams, and they have by far the best record, just speaks to something magical going on in the city of Milwaukee. And if we're going to talk magic, we cannot gloss over another incredible story this year, and that is the Seattle Mariners. They, along with the Milwaukee Brewers, are the only two teams to be in the middle of 7-game-plus winning streaks. Cal Raleigh continues to get the job done, hitting his 45th home run on Sunday. And here's why that's significant. Johnny Bench is the greatest catcher to ever live. I don't think there's any debate there. No disrespect to Yogi Berra, no disrespect to Mike Piazza, no disrespect to Roy Campanella. Johnny Bench's greatest season of his career came in 1970. 1970, he won the MVP. The most homers he's ever hit in his career came in 1970 with 45. Cal Raleigh matched that on Sunday with almost 2 months to go in Major League Baseball. Now is responsible, along with Johnny Bench, for the second most home runs by any catcher hit in a single season. And so, Botcher, if we're going to play number 41 for Shohei Ohtani, we got to play 45 for Cal Raleigh. This is courtesy of the Mariners Radio Network.
And the next pitch, swung on, belted deep to right field, a line shot, and it's gone. Goodbye, baseball. There's number 45, and Cal Raleigh didn't waste any time after moving by Javi Lopez on the all-time catcher's home run list. He's now tied for second with Johnny Bench.
Hey, that's what I said. I apologize to Phillies fans. If we're going to play home run number 41 by Ohtani, if we're going to play home run number 45 by Shohei Ohtani, we probably should play home run number 42 by Kyle Schwarber. But because I respect Ryan Botcher so much, I know, but I don't want to do it to you because it's bad enough. You cannot stay with the Phillies at this point. You really want to play it and add insult to injury?
It doesn't matter. He's gonna be a future anything but a Philly next year, so it doesn't bother me.
All right. Well, listen, I believe that Shohei Ohtani is going to win his back-to-back National League MVPs, his fourth in 5 years. I believe that Pete Crow Armstrong is going to be runner-up. Let's hear home run number 42 for the guy that is likely to finish third in the National League MVP voting. Here is Ryan Botcher's favorite Philadelphia Philly, Kyle Schwarber.
The 1-0 to Schwarber. Swung on, blasted, high in the air to right. Marte looking up, and that ball is gone. Kyle Schwarber with a towering home run back in his home state of Ohio.
See, he's a future Red.
Yeah.
Nothing to worry about. He's going to be out of Philly.
That's a good way to put it. So when you have Shohei Ohtani, and you have Kyle Schwarber, and you have, obviously, an individual in Cal Raleigh, all three are on pace for at least 56 home runs. Ohtani 56, Schwarber 57, and then Cal Raleigh 62. It's a really special time in baseball, folks. And the fact that Cal Raleigh is doing this for a Seattle Mariner team that is the only baseball team to never even make a World Series appearance, the fact that we see Milwaukee winning at the rate that they are, a team that has never won a World Series in franchise history, a team that was never able to get it done for the late, great Bob Uecker, who was a broadcaster there for 54 years. And then we are witnessing Shohei Ohtani continuing to do Shohei Ohtani things. I know this next individual is not happy with the Dodgers' loss to the Toronto Blue Jays, but he also has perspective and understands that it is about the long haul. It is about a marathon in Major League Baseball, not a sprint. So, Gilberto in San Diego, you can't be too disappointed by the Dodgers' loss to the Blue Jays when they had the bases loaded with both Ohtani and Mookie Betts. How you doing, my friend?
Muy bien. ¿Y tú, David? ¿Cómo vas?
Muy bien. Always good to hear from you, man. And it's always good to hear you on the JR Sport Brief. That's how I first heard of you, man. I remember you calling into JR years back.
Yep. That was the right he was in the great slot. Okay. being early is kind of difficult for me sometimes, but I'm calling.
I heard you, man.
I knew you were gonna be there. And yesterday was like dying by paper cuts. It was,
yeah, it's well said.
So they received 13 walks.
And what's crazy was, like, you guys got up and then you tied it in the eighth, and then you give up a leadoff home run in the ninth. Couldn't believe it.
Well, yeah. Well, it was bad.
Yes.
I mean, all around. And one thing happened that had never happened with Doug Roberts.
Okay.
He shoot Ohtani after the game.
He what?
He shoot Ohtani after the game.
He shoot?
He called him. He's called at him after the game.
Oh, sorry. You're saying he called him out?
He called him out.
Okay, got you.
Yeah, he called him out because I believe it was in the fifth inning. Freeman was at bat, Ohtani at second, and for whatever reason, with two outs, he tried to steal third, and he was out.
And what's the cardinal rule in baseball? You don't make the first out, you don't make the third out. Shohei Ohtani knows better, and I hate to take this jab at him, but he can't blame the interpreter this time. Sorry, that was too soon.
You and a lot of people do that, okay?
Sorry about that.
And in the ninth, he was a rookie. It was a great pitch, but at that point, don't hit the home run. Don't wait for the home run. Just make contact. It's only one out. But he's still allowed 44 games to go. They need to put it together because they can beat themselves, and that's not good. You can be very good, but if you beat yourself, the other team is going to help you a little bit, and you're not going to make it.
So Gilberto, do you believe that whoever makes the World Series in the National League, essentially it's the Dodgers versus the Dodgers? Is that what I'm surmising?
Well, if the Dodgers played like they've been playing since the beginning of July.
Yes. Forget it.
One and done.
Yep, absolutely.
That's it. Then they're going to go further than the wild card that they are right now, or the division series if they win the division. But if they still win in the division, they might be in the wild card because they're behind the Phillies right now. They're in third place.
Yeah, that's right. The Phillies are a game up against them right now.
Yeah, and the Phillies already won today, so it's going to get interesting. And my friend, you were talking about the quarterbacks, and I keep thinking, why do people think that Eli Manning or Philip Rivers are Hall of Fame candidates? They barely broke 500. I think their 500 record. Maybe Rivers won a little bit more games. Rivers has a lot better numbers than Manning in the regular season.
I agree. And by the way, I didn't even mention this, Gilberto. Like, Eli's never had a great regular season. He's had very good ones. Eli Manning has had great postseasons. Philip Rivers finished third
but the Hall of Fame, but
in the MVP
Hall of Fame
voting.
Is not about the postseason. Otherwise, they will have already
No, Gilberto. But it is. But it is though, because you and I both know. And if we don't even have to go back to the 60s and 70s. Yeah, Troy Aikman. Come on now. I mean, Troy Aikman.
How
he's
about
not
Dan
even.
Marino?
Well, that's different. Dan Marino is arguably one of, if not the greatest regular season quarterback in NFL history. What he did in 1984, throwing for 4,800 yards, 48 touchdowns.
As a rookie.
That was his second year.
Second year,
right?
Yeah.
That's equivalent to throwing for 7,000 yards and 70 touchdowns.
I know.
In 2025, and he made a Super Bowl that second year. Obviously, he never got back.
No, and Marino, if you look at his stats, I mean, he has like 430 touchdowns and 250 interceptions.
Yeah, but Gilberto. But the thing with Eli Manning is,
the Manning,
when his best, it's not even about the last name, is when his best was sought out, he delivered the goods. He stepped up and he delivered not one, but two Super Bowl performances in which he, objectively speaking, by all accounts, outplayed the greatest quarterback to ever live. That has to be factored in. That it has to be. And
he won.
He didn't just win. He outplayed Tom Brady. And when you factor in that there's only four other quarterbacks, Gilberto, in the history.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? We might have missed what I'm thinking. Mahomes. So I'm going back in order. Mahomes, Brady, Montana, Bradshaw. The other guy that I forgot, because I'm thinking of 67, 68, Bart Starr. So Eli Manning is one of six to ever have two Super Bowl MVPs. That alone, Gilberto, gets him in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, but they're watering down the Hall of Fame. If Jim Plunkett is not there, then doesn't matter who gets in. The guy won two Super Bowls. He was a journeyman, basically, with New England. I mean, he was with New England, came to the Raiders.
Right.
And the guy played his heart out and won the Super Bowls for them.
Yeah,
they
but
he was part of them.
But Gilberto, but look at what he did in those Super Bowls. He was obviously a huge part. He was never the best player on that particular day. Here's the other thing. 31 less touchdowns than interceptions. That matters. So his numbers work against him. Now I will I'm with you. It's tough to Jim Plunkett outside of Eli Manning is the only guy that has been responsible for two Super Bowls as a starting quarterback and has yet to enter the Hall of Fame. But the difference is Eli Manning's numbers are significantly better than Jim Plunkett. And Jim Plunkett, he never beat an all-time great quarterback in the Super Bowl the way that Eli Manning did.
Well, he beat Joe Theismann, right?
Joe Theismann was an MVP. No one is going to consider Joe Theismann to be an all-time great. He beat Theismann in the 83 season, and then when they won in 1980, he beat Ron Jaworski. Ron Jaworski is great as an analyst, and I love the nickname Jaws, and he was great when he was portrayed in Invincible in the Mark Wahlberg Greg Kinnear movie, but no one's gonna
no, and, yeah. and And the same thing as Eli Manning, he had a great defense behind him.
Yeah.
Those Raider defenses were really good, same as the Giants defenses. They were like top.
Absolutely.
They had a lot to do by winning those Super Bowls, both of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to happen what's going to happen. But the next couple of years, you have really good players coming up for the Hall of Fame. So
I know. 2026. You know what? It's interesting you bring that up. Let me see who's up for the Hall of Fame class in 2027. Football Hall of Fame class. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Yeah, there's three locks. Gronk is a lock. Adrian Peterson is a lock. Ben Roethlisberger is a lock. Those are three locks right there. And I'll tell you who else should. And Gilberto, this will be a topic that we talk about because if Sterling and I'm glad Sterling Sharp got into the Hall of Fame. But if Sterling Sharp is a Hall of Famer, do you know what other wide receiver is a Hall of Famer?
Which one?
He's up for eligibility in 2027. I'll give you a hint. He ended his career by going coyote ugly at the end.
Antonio Brown?
Yes.
He was a great receiver.
If Sterling Sharp is a Hall of Famer, then Antonio Brown is a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer. We all know he's not a Hall of Fame person, but he's a Hall of Fame player.
Well, he did put up a show when he took out his pass in New York. Okay.
No, but that's not a show. That's an episode. We don't need an episode. We got enough drama when it comes to New York sports. We don't need Antonio Brown completely showing up his team because he gets in a disagreement on the sideline. Come on now. But I will say this: he was never the same after that Vontaze Burfict hit. We all know that.
Yeah, that was a vicious hit.
Absolutely. And he didn't really make a lot of waves. And I know he was caught Facebooking live one time in the locker room when they won a playoff game in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I remember that.
But all in all, he was pretty good. Gilberto, speaking of pretty good, you are pretty good, my friend. Great to talk to you as always. We'll talk soon. You have a great rest of your Monday. And go Dodgers.
Let's go Dodgers.
That's right. Always good to hear from you in San Diego, Gilberto. Number to get aboard, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. When we get back, there was more than just a 41st home run by Shohei Ohtani, a 42nd home run by Kyle Schwarber, a 45th home run by Cal Raleigh in the last 24 hours. There was a 45-year-old making waves on the PGA Tour. Yeah, a 45-year-old won an event. We should expect that. Because he's been pretty good and still one of the top golfers in the world. What that tournament was, we'll get to that on the other side. We'll get to your calls as well. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. The Good Shepherd, in for the great JR Sport Brief. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's David Shepherd.
You are listening to the JR Sport Brief. Great to be with you, however and wherever you may be listening from. Now, we do talk about everything on the Infinity Sports Network, not just football, not just baseball, but golf. And it wasn't pretty for Tommy Fleetwood yet again, as he comes up short, unfortunately, at another PGA Tour event. This time it would be at the St. Jude Championship during the FedEx Cup. And Justin Rose, of all people, despite being three shots back with a few holes to go, he doesn't blink. And he makes up a three-shot deficit over the last five holes. And birdie is the last two of them in a playoff to beat J.J. Spahn, the defending U.S. Open champion, to ultimately win the FedEx St. Jude Championship on Sunday. It is his 24th victory. Has not won on the PGA Tour in 2.5 years. But it is his 14th victory on the PGA Tour, and that is the most among any active European player, minus Rory McIlroy, who has 29. An incredible 10-foot putt we saw on the 18th on the third playoff hole. He was clutch. He came through. J.J. Spahn, with plenty of moxie, we've seen him make some incredible putts, but it wouldn't be the 2025 U.S. Open that would be victorious. It would be the 2013 U.S. Open winner, in Justin Rose, who again pulls off his first PGA Tour event win in 2.5 years. If Scotty Scheffler had his caddy, would be a very different story. Scotty would have had PGA Tour victory number 18, but I'm glad Justin Rose got his eventual PGA Tour win first in nearly 3 years. Kind of feel bad for Tommy Fleetwood. This is a guy that was leading after round two, leading after round three, greatest player to never win a PGA Tour event. He's got 43 top 10 finishes, 29 top 5 finishes, 12 top 3 finishes. But there would be only one Rose on Sunday, and it was Justin. Let's hear from the 45-year-old after his PGA Tour win.
Yeah, it kind of puts me right back in, you know, the season's race. I haven't even looked at where that projects me and all these types of things, but back up in the, you know, in the realms of where I sat for a long time. You know, I haven't been back to East Lake since 2019, and that's been bugging me, and that's obviously been a huge goal, so obviously that's taken care of. And I've definitely played some good golf this year when it's mattered. Like I feel like my good has been good. My consistency hasn't been there, but I've been telling people that I feel like when I play my best golf, I'm able to compete with the best players in the world. And obviously today, proving that I can win against the best players in the world.
Damn, does he take a breath when he speaks? Damn.
No.
I mean, come on. Damn, let us have a little bit of a second there to kind of appreciate what you're saying. He's a motor mouth. He should be doing what I do for a living. I tell you this much. He's a better speaker than I am a golfer. That's for damn sure. That was unbelievable. He didn't take a freaking breath. He talks like he's 25. No wonder he's out there beating guys half his age.
It's quantity over quality of speak, though.
Damn.
He kind of went in a circle in a weird way.
By the way, pretty impressive in all seriousness at 45 years old. The guy is a top 15 player in the world and still getting it done. Botcher, so we do this date in sports history, so we will do that next segment. We will get to your calls as well. I look forward to that. It's going to be exciting. I got some good ones. Hey, Justin Rock, I'm going to put you on the spot. Always good to work with you, brother.
Always great to work with you too, David.
You got a Penn State hat on. Did you go to Penn State?
I am a graduate of Penn State, yes.
So you know you come into the AP Top 25 poll as the second best team in the country.
Yes, indeed. I figured that was a good day to wear the Penn State hat.
I'm with you there. Do you trust Drew Aller, though?
The thing with Drew Aller is he has gotten better every single season.
Do you trust James Franklin? That's a real question.
I trust James Franklin, I'd say, more than the average Penn State fan. Now, I'm also a little skewed because I was a sophomore at Penn State when the Jerry Sandusky scandal came to be, and so I've seen the worst of what college athletics can do. So if James Franklin goes out there and wins 10-11 games every year and competes for Big Ten titles and keeps putting together first-round draft picks into the NFL and the players are representing the school well, I'm a happy guy. So the fact that they're number two in the country going into the season, made the college football playoff Final Four last year, I'm feeling pretty good.
Let me tell you something. There's bad stories in sports, and then there's bad stories in sports. And I can't ever recall a worse sports story than what transpired with Jerry Sandusky. And there's been some really bad ones, like, you know, off the field. Penn State, for them to recover where it wasn't the death of them as a program, it's a credit and a testament to Bill O'Brien. Ultimately, James Franklin got them to another level. It is a minor miracle that they still exist, because there was a lot of people who wanted them to have that death sentence.
And there was a lot of good arguments, but I remember doing the first student radio pregame show for football after the scandal broke and Paterno got let go.
Oh, yeah.
And my phrase on the broadcast that day was, you know, the players that are on the field right now had nothing to do with what happened. They were the same age as, you know, what had happened when it happened. You know, these guys still deserve the support, and they did a fantastic job. This is my hot take on Penn State. I'm a big believer. Everyone talks about the Paterno statue. Is it going to come back? Will it come back? Is it somewhere in, you know, storage, somewhere hidden off from public view? I'd argue that they should build a Bill O'Brien statue before they put that back up, considering what he and James Franklin did, you know, to help save the football program.
This is such a damn good argument. Why are we having this when I got to throw to a sports flash, Justin Rock? Why are you bringing this up to me? You're teasing me with this great point, and we got to throw to an update, man. This isn't fair.
I'm really good at bad timing.
Well, that's a story of life. Timing is everything.
Amen.
But I tell you what, we will have this conversation at some point on the air.
Absolutely.
Because it is a conversation worth having. And it is a very deep and complex conversation.
Very.
And it is not to be taken lightly.
No.
You let me know we follow each other on Twitter?
Yes, we do.
I want you to hit me up when you are working next with me, and I will plan it when we have this back, because I want to talk about this at more length.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, good.
We'll figure a time and date. We'll make it happen, my friend.
Good, good. Hey, that's a very serious topic you're bringing up. We got to get to a sports flash, though. When we get back, we're going to do this date in sports history. We're going to get to your calls. Again, before we do anything else on The Good Shepherd, in for the great JR Sport Brief right here on the Infinity Sports Network, let's get to our latest sports flash. And here is the very opinionated and insightful Justin Rock.
Gaines Super Flings are here to take your laundry to the next level.
Talking about Gaines Super Flings. Super sized laundry packs. These things are huge. Super fresh, super clean. Gaines Super Flings.
Gaines Super Flings laundry packs have 4 times the Oxi cleaning power and 3 times the Febreze freshness versus Gaines original liquid.
Super fresh, super clean. Gaines Super Flings.
Gaines Super Flings for next level laundry.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's David Shepherd.
Welcome in, everybody. You are indeed listening to the JR Sport Brief. My name is David Shepherd. You can follow me at Shep on Air. Before we do this date in sports history, I want to honor people that have been waiting very patiently on hold. Let's get this particular segment started with a friend of the show, Marshall in Milwaukee. Marshall, always appreciate the patience. Go ahead, my friend. The floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate it, Shep, as always. Glazer subbing for JR. I have called him before, too, so he's really good, too. And it's great that he lets you sub for him. And
yes.
I just want to quickly comment, how about them Brewers? It's just incredible.
Ten in a row very soon, huh, Marshall?
It's just unreal. You know, I've kind of my old theme song, back to my old disco Fleetwood Mac days. Back to the great Christine McVie, was we've lost a few years ago, but
right.
You make love, and she always saying, "I can't believe this is happening to me," and that's how I feel right now. You know, it's just unbelievable. 30 games above 500, we're fixing to be. It's just we just hope that we can sustain this in postseason, but just enjoying the ride right now. And just a comment on those home run highlights you had. And don't forget, I'll praise my rivals down the road. Schwarber was huge in game 6 and 7 of that 2016 World Series. That gets forgotten a little bit.
Fair point.
They don't win without him. But the home run highlights that you had with Philadelphia and Los Angeles, it's still unbelievable to some of us. That for the Dodgers, it's not Vin Scully, and for the Phils, it's not the great Andy Musser, who also was great in football.
Yeah,
it's
this is Marshall. This is a special year in baseball. Like, you know, Genio Suarez, Aaron Judge. Like, we have right now 5 players that are on pace for more than 50 home runs.
I know.
I don't think that's ever been done before in MLB history.
I think you're right. Even with the great Yankees and you know the murderers' rows they've had since the Roaring Twenties, you know,
right.
And all that, it's incredible. But the one that I guess just blows me away right now, and you were talking about Cal Raleigh, it's just unreal. He even hit one against us in that Seattle series we played out there, but we contained him, I thought, all right. But
right.
45 already with too much. That 1970 Johnny Bench year, I was just a 9-10-year-old kid at the time,
sure.
But I remember it well. I remember him being talked about, the late great Kurt Gowdy and others at that time talking
you're
about
bringing
him.
Up, you're bringing up some iconic Hall of Fame broadcasters, man. You talk about Scully and obviously, you know, Kurt Gowdy. You know, Kurt Gowdy, I actually know his granddaughters very well.
Oh.
Small world, right? Yeah. They grew up in Connecticut. So I knew Kurt Gowdy from a very young age, very dignified, very classy. You know, yeah. I hope young people Google that name, Kurt Gowdy. And I know you know that name and the significance of it, but I mean that's broadcasting royalty.
And I still remember him being many of the others that was sad in the day the news came of the tragedy of Roberto Clemente. I mean, I remember he was almost in tears. And I can tell you that morning, and you're one of your callers from Pittsburgh. A couple of weeks ago, I enjoyed that story from him. But even though it was very tough to hear, I was getting up that New Year's morning, looking forward to the Rose Bowl. It was my first stint here in Milwaukee.
Right.
Looking for the Rose Bowl. I had a little Cubs blood in me still at that time. But always loved Roberto Clemente. Loved those. Yeah. You could reject the heck out of those teams. And that was the first news on my mom's little radio. Came on in the morning, and that was the first news I heard. And it was just, I said, are you, oh.
Well, greatest arm in the history of baseball, in my opinion. Yeah. And what he was doing in terms of passing away and going back to, you know, just Puerto Rico and being able to help out those, you know, in need, dealing with the relief efforts and just the flight he took and dies in a plane crash. You know, Marshall, there's a plan for all of us. We don't always know why. We don't always know how. And something like that, you know, just really creates a lot of doubt in a lot of people. When something like that happens, but you have to think that there is something greater for even Roberto Clemente than what he was able to accomplish on this earth, and someone that in 38 years of living did as much as anyone could at 38 years old. So,
well, when you had my tragic thing with classmates of mine, Shep, and it just passed 22 years here recently, and I admit I shed a few tears on that anniversary. But I'll tell you what, as a good friend of mine who also lost people that she knew, it was just so multi-generational.
Sure.
And that broke the news to me. One of the things she said to me, she said before, you go through the stages of grief, Marshall, and I sure went through them for a while.
Well,
it was their turn, and it's always going to be our turn. We don't know when that's going to be, and we just have to enjoy life and just take each day and week and year one day at a time. It's cliched, but it's so true. And never to thank and love those that we care about the most.
Marshall, appreciate the sports knowledge. Appreciate even more the pearls of wisdom. You be well, my friend. We'll talk soon.
You bet. And are you going to be on the rest of the week?
JR is coming back Wednesday. I'll be on tomorrow, though. Tomorrow, 6 p.m., 10 p.m. Eastern time.
Dinner hour period for me during this time, but I'll try to get back to you. Otherwise, we'll chat again this weekend.
Sounds good, brother. Always good to hear from Marshall in Milwaukee. Lou in Rochester, go ahead, sir.
Hey, Dave. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks. Always good to hear from you, Lou. Talk. Of course, man.
Yeah. I was nice talking with you.
Likewise.
Listen, I came really impressed with that Jackson Dart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because even Steve Pasker on the Bills Network was mentioning how he was making kind of right decisions. He actually played that half like kind of a verse number one player. The Bills drafted well with some defensive tackles. The kids were getting in.
Right.
And he wasn't fazed.
No. He showed what a dual threat he is, Lou, which you got to really love moving into, you know, the era of mobile quarterbacks and these dual threats. Man, there's a reason why he was all SEC last year, first team. There's a reason why he was one of two quarterbacks drafted in the first round, and he very much looked the part. And then Abdul Carter, man, what they got in the number three overall pick, things are looking up for Big Blue, Lou.
Yeah, I think the bull knows it because I think he joked about the odds were there only a six pick to be 617.
Right.
And he kind of laughed at it. And I could see his point because if Dart starts playing, the Giants won't be like that. They'll knock off a lot of people in survivor pools that thought that they were going to be a terrible team. They're not going to be.
Absolutely, Lou. Well, listen, man, always good to hear from you. You call anytime. We'll be in touch, okay?
All right. Take it easy, Dave.
Thanks,
Thank
Lou.
You.
Great to hear from you. And so we got to have continuity. We got to finish with this day in sports history.
Back, 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 back.
Back
back in the days when I was young. I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
It's time for This Day in Sports History.
You see, back in those days,
we had radio and you couldn't see anything, and it was primitive and lousy, and we liked it.
On the JR Sport Brief Show.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
Well, thank you, Larry Merchant. This day in sports history, 1919, the Packers franchises originated on this date. 1929, Babe Ruth hit career home run number 500, becoming the first player in MLB history to ever have 500 home runs. 1950, Joe DiMaggio, for the first time in his career, was benched. He was benched because he went for a 4-for-38 slump, and he wasn't nice to Mickey Mantle. I added the second part. Number four, 1961, Warren Spahn become the eighth pitcher to win 300 MLB games. 1969, Don Drysdale retires from Major League Baseball because of the shoulder injury. The late, great Don Drysdale. Last L.A. Dodger, by the way, to play in Brooklyn as a Dodger. 1971, Harmon Killebrew, Marshall and Milwaukee's guy, becomes the 10th player in MLB history to hit 500 home runs. 1993, Roger Clemens gets his 2,000th career strikeout. 2002, Carrie Webb wins the Women British Open by two strokes, securing her fifth major victory, a major victory hopefully Scottie Scheffler has in April at Augusta. 2013, Jason Duffner achieves his first and only major title by winning the PGA Championship by two shots. Ryan Botcher, there are 24 MLB pitchers to amass 300 career wins. One of them is not in the Hall of Fame. Do you know who that pitcher is?
Off the top of my head?
Yes.
No idea.
The Rocket. Roger Clemens.
Oh, because that's, yeah.
I thought you were going to get that. That was obvious.
Oh, yeah. It took a second. Brain's not working.
I hear you. Botcher, the brain was working for the show. Great to work with you, brother. Awesome back and forth. Appreciate all the effort you put in. Thanks for making my life easy. And my sincere thanks to all of those on the busy phone lines that called in. My sincere thanks to everyone who tweeted at me, at Shep on Air. Do not go anywhere, though, because the great Bart Winkler, Carlos Ortiz, they're coming up next. And folks, I will be on tomorrow, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Can't wait to be with you for another 4 hours. But again, you want must-listen radio, appointment listening? Bart Winkler, he's got you covered for the next 4 hours. This is David Shepard saying I love you all, everybody. Talk to you in 20 hours.